What's up, everybody? David Pollack here of See Ball, Get Ball podcast. I hope you like it, man. Be sure to follow the show wherever you subscribe, YouTube, or any of your other platforms.
Welcome in, everybody. It's a fun time of year. Now down to our last conference. If you've been joining us, if you missed this, you can go back, man. We previewed the SEC. We picked the champions. We picked the winner. We picked playoff teams. We did it with the Big Ten. We did it with the ACC. Kind of finishing up now with the Big 12. And actually some timely news today out of the Big 12 that we'll get to, Brent. But happy to know back home. Both of us are back home. Girls basketball, thank the good Lord for me, is over for the month of July. And hopefully a long time moving forward, like get a break from it. But you excited to be home, big fella?
Oh, my gosh. Which, I mean, unfortunately, I was in West Virginia passing away of a family member. Rest in peace, Uncle Dave. But that was one where before that we were gone, and then gone again. We just got back today. This, I think, like third night in 12-day period that I get to sleep in my own bed, which is great. I know you talk about missing your food. I miss the bed. As much, like your own bed, there's nothing like your own bed. But true. Speaking of today and coming back, so I was in Chicago, and Cameron and I get the Uber to come home, and he starts talking football. And I want to give a shout out to my man Britton that was the Uber driver today, because he subbed right there. I don't know if Illinois is a hands-free state, but if it is, he broke the law to sub to the pod. So
my man, let's go. Hey, and believe it or not, like we look at some of our metrics. Chicago is like one of our biggest markets, and I don't know if that's because we've had the big fella Brett Bielema on.
We had Marcus Freeman earlier too, so that was
maybe one. So maybe those help. But Brent, I've been in my bed in the month of July. Speaking of in my bed, I've been in my bed for a week in the month of July. We'll get more to this on See Ball, Get Ball, but filming a documentary that everybody's going to absolutely love and want to watch. I can promise you, it's really, really cool. Not going to tell the specifics of it yet, but as we get closer. We'll definitely share them, but been doing that and meeting with a bunch of people all over the place. Went to the Capitol, met with some interesting people.
There we go.
But Big 12, jumping on in. Memphis, man. Memphis said, hey, I'll break you off. And listen, remember, SMU did this. SMU was forward-thinking and was smart enough to realize, like, if I'm going to get big in college football, like, we need to join one of the big power conferences. And they ponied up the dough and did a good job of joining. So what'd you think about when you saw SMU and 200 mil? That's a lot of cheddar.
It's a lot of cheddar to say no to.
Yeah.
And they also, I think it was like 4 or 5 years that they said, no, we don't need any revenue distribution or anything like that. There's all kinds of things as it relates to that. But that's an amazing that they said no. And also it drives home the point that you just made, that these teams, especially like Memphis, because Memphis is a highly competitive group of five team or non-power four team.
About to say, yeah.
They know they have to be there in the future.
Or you have
they're
to.
They're going to get left out, or they're going to end up in their own sort of world. It's going to be like truly there, unless some form of relegation comes in, they're in a bad place and they want to get there as much as they possibly can.
Yeah. And listen, and Memphis is a good squad. Like they beat up on FSU, but they beat teams every year, man. And they kind of show you how good they are. But SMU paid $200 million to join the ACC. That's what they did. And then they go win the daggum thing and actually not win it. They win the regular season, go undefeated, lose to Clemson barely in the end. But, you know, everybody wants to be in a power four, which makes sense. It makes a lot of sense because you have access. And so that made a lot of sense. But we're going to go through, Brent, some people look at leagues and they say, how many national championship contenders do you have? That's whether your league's any good. I couldn't disagree more. I don't follow that philosophy. I love football, and I love football games. I love competitive football games. And I would argue that the Big 12 delivers that on average more than everybody. Like, you turn into a game, man, and you're like, this is a great game. This is a great game. Week in and week out, a bunch of competitive teams. Have they had the dominant team, you know, the past several years? No. But the games are so good, and the conference is so good, man, that I think some people just kind of gloss over and like, oh, it's a cute little conference. No, it's a very competitive conference, and I would argue probably top to bottom the most competitive conference.
almost half their conference games this season ago. It was mid to high 40s in terms of percentage were one score games. And it's always fun football. And it's just top to bottom, like you said, as good as it gets. And by the way, one of only two conferences last year that had three 11 win teams. The other was the Big Ten. That actually had four, I think, but still. And you talked about the sort of parity and whatnot. The team we're going to talk about first here, Arizona State, goes worst to first. And
preseason last year at Big 12 Media Days, they were predicted to finish last. Like, finish last. And listen, I am wrong about a lot of things, okay? I will admit that. And my preseason Connor Wegman last year was a big swing and a miss. But I also talked about Arizona State, Brent, and talked about buying stock, and I was going to buy them, and I was going to gobble them up. And I don't think you should slow down on this stock. Like, this is going to be a very, very good stock for a long time. Kenny Dillingham's a stud. I mean, he's a stud. He's young. This is a guy that is at his place. He's at his home. Like, he's at his dream job. Like, Kirby Smart came into his dream job and succeeded right away. Like, I think it's obviously a great fit. You obviously saw the takeaway. When you look at this roster, experience coming back, a lot of experience winning coming back. So, I mean, Brent, we can go through these players, but, like, they ain't going nowhere, dog.
No. And are they like a NVIDIA or you just bought that?
Just keep buying it.
You're feeling really good.
Yeah, I mean, it's just going to be there. Like, you could keep gobbling it up. And listen, what some people would say was, what about Cam Scataboo? And that's probably where this conversation starts. Is, yeah,
it does.
Like, you're replacing a mule. Like, a absolute stallion, a thoroughbred that they gave the football to over and over and over again. And that's probably where you're going to start with your list and with where people, like, the biggest question mark and hole if they're going to have sustainability.
Yep. A Scataboo-sized hole to replace. But they do have 17 starters returning and one of the highest in terms of percentage returning production in all of college football. But it starts with Kyson Brown at running back and then the Army transfer.
Sip.
Kanye Udo.
Sip. Sip is what they call Kyson Brown, by the way.
Yeah.
Back up in 24, really good spring. Relique Brown is a transfer from USC. Like, and then the guy you were talking about, Udo, is a hammer. And has some, I ain't saying he's Scataboo, but he's got that physicality and that bruiser. Like, that short yardage, probably bruiser. And Brent, another thing too, if I'm going to take this list and I'm going to go a Cam Scataboo size hole, I also get Sam Levitt. I get his running ability. And I get an offense with creativity. Like, I get an offense that knows how to space it and use the whole field, use the screen game, manufacture things when you need to, that plays aggressive. Big 12 championship game early in that game against Iowa State. Like, going forward on fourth down and throwing bootlegs, you know, and throwing the football to tight ends, which they got some tight ends too. But that's why I think it's easy to trust this offense. There's not a Scataboo, but there's a bunch of guys that I think can fill that void.
Yep, and Jordan Tyson, who's on your fantasy team, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, he is, baby.
Levitt's primary target a season ago returns from injury, and they've added to that receiver room with a few transfers as well. I think that just makes them.
I'll give you some guys, Brent. I'll give you some guys they're really excited about at Arizona State. Malik McClain, he redshirted a year ago but played in the postseason. Really excited about him. Jalen Moss is a veteran from Fresno State that I've been told from people there that, like, a great fit in the system, like a perfect fit to what they do. A tight end returning from last year is an NFL-type guy. They've got size. They've got up front. They've got a good offensive line. They've got a lot of experience up front. There's just a lot to like. And when you start looking at that side of the football, I think the offense will be good because they also have a quarterback with swag, man. Like, I'm a fan. I'm going to continue to be a fan. When he said, like, Sam Levitt said, Quinn Ewers, like, what? Huh? Like, I'm better. Like, I just, And they put up 31 against Texas. Nobody put up 30 over 30 against Texas. Ohio State scored 21 on defense against Texas, on offense against Texas. Like, that was a elite defense, but they showed you, man, and it was big plays, and it was creativity with halfback passes and, you know, just straight toughness and keep swinging and tempo and all the stuff that they did so well, man. So I believe in that guy and that offense. The question now goes to the defense.
To the other side of the ball.
Yeah, and what they were good at. Number one in the Big 12, stopping the run, Brent. Like, they were, again, both sides of the ball in the line of scrimmage, they were really, really good. Now, secondary, it was a struggle last year.
Well, it was big plays. They were top 10 in the country in terms of interceptions, pass breakups, and that's one of those things where can you depend on that? That's typically one of those numbers that oftentimes swings back to sort of the mean. You don't get as much plays like that. And if that happens, you have to get more pressure on the quarterback. Your front has to play better, and because the pressure wasn't necessarily the greatest.
It was awful. They didn't do that. What was their numbers in there, Brent? Like, because watching them a year ago, I remember watching their defensive line, and I was just like, who gets home? Like, who gets to the quarterback? And that was they stopped the run. They were physical up front. But then I just didn't see a bunch of guys that were able to get to the QB and affect the quarterback, and hence why they gave up big play after big play.
We talked about Alabama a week ago and some of their low pressure numbers. Arizona State had double digit less sacks than Alabama and almost 30 less pressures than Alabama. So massive drop down from getting after the quarterback in that realm. But schedule, they avoid the state of Texas or state of Kansas.
No Kansas.
Get Texas Tech at home. They got to go to Baylor, at Utah.
Yep.
At Iowa State, and then the sneaky – it shouldn't be a sneaky game. They should take care of business, but week two at Miss State, like, you can't lose that game. You can't fumble around that game. If you're – for the benefit of your own conference in the bigger picture, you got to go take care of business.
See you just made that comment like this is the Arizona State of old. Like, you just made that comment like Arizona State, and you're wondering if they're a flash in the pan and they can handle expectations. I don't – I'm past that. Like, I've already graduated. I've already got my fork right here. Like, I'm forks up, baby. Like, I don't understand that. Like, I Mississippi State is very ungood. Yep. Mississippi State is going to struggle to win football games. It's Starkville and Stark Vegas, and it's cowbells and all that stuff. But, you know, again, we want to see improvement. I'm not worried about that. But I think hosting Texas Tech is big. But at those other guys, those are all competitive games that you're going at too that can beat you. And that's got to be something that's interesting to watch. But I think this conference starts the conversation starts with Arizona State and then everybody else underneath them. Like, they're clearly the favorite to me, and talent, coaching, you know, by the way, their OC, Marcus Arroyo, the names of guys that he's worked with, Brent, is unbelievably impressive. I mean, recruited or signed Herbert, Justin Herbert, Goff. Like, and I could keep going down the list. Like, he's and this is the next guy in his repertoire. But I just think this offense, another year in the system, another year with OC, with QB, it's going to be fun. And if I'm an Arizona State, I'm pretty jacked up and excited. I'm pretty excited for their defensive secondary. They add a bunch of guys that are from big schools, which I think is obviously never a bad thing. Guys with experience, their safety punch is good. Like, their corners are back. Like, a lot of that secondary that gave up some big plays, there's also a ton of experience back to help them out. So I think we're all on Arizona State. Next, we're going to I don't know if I'm going to call them my squad for the year in the Big 12, but I love Baylor, man. Like, I love Baylor. I went back and watched game after game and started to see big number 13 at QB, Sawyer Robertson. And he's a big boy. He's 6'4", he's 220. He shows you the toughness. He shows you the wheels. You know, he really took a hold of this. Once he started to ascend last year, they started to ascend. And they ended the season on a 6-game win streak and just – you know, it reminded me of the Baylor offense of old that's got power They can run the football, spread you out, run the football, spread you out, take deep shots. And it started to me with Robertson and the big plays and 28 touchdowns, 8 interceptions, you know, 445 against LSU in the bowl game. I think 13's got a chance to be one of the best guys in this conference.
Him, and when you look at their season, that was a struggle bus kind of early. But that Texas Tech game and after that, the last 7 games, right?
They dropped 59 against Texas Tech, by the way. Like, they just scored again and again. Like, 59. They almost dropped a 60-burger on Texas Tech last year. Baylor.
Which is why Texas Tech went and bought a lot of defensive players. But,
yes.
Robertson, 290 a game, 19 TDs, five picks after that. Coincide with a lot of the running game that stepped up for them as well with Washington and Pendergrass, so who are back. This is – and the biggest thing for me looking at this team, and when you see and you're wanting to identify like that, hey, I want to be on that team that's going to be in the playoff that nobody's predicting is going to be on the playoff, it's an adult team. It's a team full of redshirt seniors, redshirt juniors, grad transfer seniors, their whole up and down their first 22 – all of adults.
Well, adults, and here's the thing. I trust Dave Aranda. Now, last year wasn't a great defensive year for Baylor by any stretch of the imagination, but it's not like we haven't seen him do this at a high level. Like, he knows how to coach defense. I think he's got an offense that can put up points. You kind of casually mentioned Bryson Washington. That dude's a baller. Like, that dude's a baller. And once he started playing more, it's not a surprise that they started winning more last year because he was such a good compliment, because you can see Robertson, he can run, but now you can see Washington can be the bell cow. He can make big plays. So 30 and 13, when you're watching tape and you're watching those guys, they're going to be so good. I mean, he averaged 136 on that 6-game winning streak a game, and he had over 10 touchdowns. Like, he was the guy. The secondary for them, Brent, you know, Simpson Hutt, Ohio State, Turner from Northwestern, an edge guy from Oregon with Barnes, an all-conference FIU linebacker. Like, it's just they brought in a bunch of guys, man. So you have the adults, you have the experience, but now you bring in a bunch of guys that have played, that have a bunch of ability to mix with the experience, Brent. That's why I think they've got a real chance to have a great season and to be the next best team in that league. Like, I don't think they're going to beat Arizona State, and I know this is preseason prediction season, and there's nothing I hate more than people that say, oh, they're going to be so much better than – like, they're going to be a problem. What the freak does that mean? Like, they're going to be a problem. I can say that about everybody and every show that I go on to make you feel really good about your squad. Like, I think Baylor's in the conversation for getting to the Big 12 championship game. Like, and I'm going to put them on a list of 3 or 4 teams tops, and – their odds to me are that high. They got a chance to win it with their combination of offense, defense. Schedule, though, Brent, early. That first game, we've already talked about it with another team.
Yeah, and that's one sort of the question of this team is, given that they have Auburn at home to open with, and then they go to SMU.
Jeez.
And if you
really? Those are your out-of-conference games? Like, man, you're not doing yourself any favors.
No. And by the way, in their first conference game after playing Samford, their first conference game is Arizona State. So, like,
but at home, where,
at home, but if you drop those two non-conference games, is it a, hey, let's wipe the slate clean. We got the conference stuff now. Or I actually think they're very much important in the grand scheme of the conference and potentially getting two teams into the playoff if they want to, or if they eventually that becomes a conversation.
Yeah, and starting fast is an understatement for them this year. When you play Auburn at SMU and Arizona State in 3 of your first 4 games,
yep.
I mean, a lot of that's going to be early. But Baylor's got all the tools, that they've got all the ingredients to be a dominant team, and it starts with the 1-2 punch at running back and quarterback for me. I think they're going to be a problem on offense. They're going to be a real problem.
Wait a second. You just said they're going to be a problem.
I said they're going to be a real problem on offense.
Okay.
Like, they're going to score. They're scoring 35 a game. Like, okay. you can mark them down as being one of the top offenses in the country.
I was just checking you there because, you know, you did just say that you didn't like when people
they're going to be a problem. Things.
And all right. By the way,
where we go next?
When you look at the teams that we're looking at tonight, we're splitting them in half. So we kind of went one every other. So tomorrow night we'll hit like Kansas State, Texas Tech, things like that. But next we go to the Cyclones, who are coming off, and Iowa State coming off their first double-digit winning season ever in the history of
forever.
And so like that's as good as it gets. And yet they didn't make the playoff and they lost in the Big 12 championship game. So, and it starts first and foremost, like question of all questions. We just talked about best season in history. They just had the best combination of receivers they've ever had. Cause I was looking at the list of previous receivers that have been drafted, like Noel and Higgins, highest draft picks from their school at receiver. In terms of quality of talent, at least in the pros, you're looking at Alan Lazard, maybe is the next guy on that list of really good players there. But you got to replace those two. As much as I like Becht, as much as I like Matt Campbell, that's two humongous playmakers that are gone from their squad.
They were the only two receivers in the regular season in the nation that were both over 1,000 yards. And
on the same team.
I talk about Rocco Becht, Brent, and I talk about how much I love him because I love his grit. And you watch that Iowa game, you know, bam, 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 down the field with less than a minute. And he's made of all the right stuff. He's going to scramble. He's going to lower his shoulder. He's going to run people over. He's one of the most accomplished Iowa State quarterbacks in history. I mean, so over 6,700 yards, like 48 touchdowns. He's got – but the thing is, it's 59% completion percentage. And he's just got to get a little bit more efficient. And this is an experience year. Like – I'm experienced. I have all the things. Who steps up at wide receiver? But this is a squad that, you know, what's amazing about Matt Campbell is, Brent, if you spent 10 minutes with him, you'd love him because his idea of culture is old school. Like it's build it. It's holding people accountable. It's development. Like it's overtime. It's adversity. It's evolving. Like it's all the things that you used to do in college football back in the day, but now it's kind of been like transfer portal this, transfer portal that. But they've still been an unbelievable job of mixing in highly recruited kids. I mean, just Dominic Orange is a guy that chose Iowa State over Ohio State and Georgia and like all the big teams in the country, and then has had a really good career thus far, but chose to stay and not go in the transfer portal. And you know good and well, like, the offers were there, Brent, like to make more money and to leave. But I think the culture that he's built and the buy-in, those guys look in his eyes, they believe him. And that's why this is another roster that a bunch of guys that have been there, but then sprinkling in, you know, a few ads like, you know, Cannon Butler, who's will be off the edge, and Malone from Tulsa, you know, the defensive end, the defensive line throwing in a few guys there. But this is a squad that always, you know, makes you beat them. They're fun to watch. They're not, Brent, they're not overly explosive. They've got to win the margins, right? Like there's a lot of teams in the Big 12. Like we could talk about so many teams that are really, really similar. But Iowa State last year, you think about their squad and the games, some of the games they pulled out last year that were close games. They made big plays in close games to get their first 11-win season.
The biggest thing for me with them is their schedule and the fact that they have that opening game against Kansas State, the week zero game that's in Ireland.
Like,
do you like that that's a conference game? Like, that seems to me, if you're going to play that game, it needs to be a non-conference game. But, I mean, last year we had, Tech and Florida State in that game. But that's their toughest, outside of Arizona State, that's their toughest conference opponent. And they got to play them on, you know, the other side of the world or halfway.
Yeah, and obviously breaking in so many new things, you know, and breaking in new pieces when you don't necessarily know, you know, what it is. But that first game obviously going to be tough. But then, you know, they play Iowa every year, which is always, you know, super tough. And I know that's not within the league, but that's a tough game. South Dakota State, you'll give them Arkansas State, you'll give them Arizona. But at UC, at Colorado, BYU, Arizona State, at TCU, Kansas, and Oklahoma State. So it's a pretty good schedule. I don't think it's murderer's row. They're a team that's been developed. There's so much continuity on staff and who they are and what they are every year. Like They're going to be a tough team. They're going to be a tough. This is why the league's fun, because teams like this are going to be good. They're going to beat a lot of teams. They're going to be in the mix, but can they be elite? And I think offensively, you know, it's hard to imagine them taking a big step forward when you just lost two superstars, like at wide receiver. I can't see that picture, man.
That's, we've looked at other conferences. Who's the leap team? Who's the down to earth team? This is one that kind of comes back down to earth. I feel like they're in the sort of 8-5 or 8-4 type, 7-5, 8-4 realm, and take a few steps back for me. Now, the leap team, you seem to maybe think it was Baylor or maybe Texas Tech. I'm going with the next team that we're talking about. I'm going with the Horned Frogs, because I was, what's amazing with TCU, and I was looking at this because it's curious. They've, since Francione took over in 1998, so, you know, 20, almost 27 years, something like that, they've only had 5 losing seasons. Like, the consistency of the program, especially with Gary Patterson, like,
yep,
it's just phenomenal. Now, I will say, 3 of the last 5 years are three of those 5 losing seasons. So it's kind of been an every other with that. But I think this team specifically, because I think their quarterback might be kind of the most underrated and not talked about big time quarterback returning in the country, because we've got so many QBs that are back and so many young QBs. This is the guy that's kind of getting lost in that. And with Josh Hoover, who had the second high or the highest passing grade in the Big 12 last year, Leavitt was the highest overall graded QB, but he had the highest passing grade, second overall in terms of overall grade, yards thrown, like, was almost at 4,000 yards, number 2 in yards, number 6 in touchdowns in the Power 4. Like, lots to like with Josh Hoover.
Sell me. I like it. You're selling me like crazy. Three of their top 4 wide receivers are gone. And I think that's the interesting thing about this explosiveness. And Brent, can they run the football? Like, can they get more back? Yeah, I know they can throw it, but winning one-dimensionally just doesn't always sit well. Like, it's, you better be that guy at the QB spot. But TCU's interesting. You know, defense, you do think Gary Patterson, you think defense. Like, you think, you know, shutting people down and all the D they had for so many years, that wasn't the case. Now, Andy Avalos came over a year ago and they were improved. Like, they were better than they had been, but they weren't elite by any stretch. But I tell you what, I was looking at them a little bit, and I actually, I went down a rabbit hole a little bit. And
how far?
a little bit. I nerded out a little bit, and I was looking at their transfers, because they got Bud Clark, who's an all Pac-12 or a Big 12, excuse me, Pac-12. Wow, they don't exist. 2-pack, going to be an 8-pack soon. But anyways, and I was looking at their pass rush, and I was looking at the guys they added, and they added an all Pac-12 linebacker, which is fantastic. That's really, really good for Andy Avalos and his scheme. And then the sack leader, Washington State's sack leader. And Brent, I went and watched his tape, and I don't know why, but I went and just started watching his highlights, and he was number 32. Now, pronouncing his name is Ansul Dinbu is his name. And if I said that correctly, which I tried to, and I wrote it down phonetically to try to say it correctly. Hey, this dude's a good player, man. Like, he's really good. I expect him to be one of those guys that we're talking about next year and be like, where did he come from? Oh, he came from Washington State. Really? Okay. Yeah, he's good. I mean, he's an interior pass rusher. He was a wrestler in high school, like a 2-time state champion. And he looks like it, Brent, like with his hands and quickness. He's got, and I don't know what it is, but when you're a defensive tackle and you got those lower numbers or those running back numbers, you just look more athletic. So, like, 32 and 1 and, like, the single-digit ones, you just look more athletic. So, can they take a tick up, you know, on the defensive side of the football? Because that's one thing that – the reason you've seen losing seasons is, well, you didn't see it with Gary Patterson because they always played great defense. They always played great defense. They used what they had. They developed really well. But I will say this, down the stretch – they looked better on defense and held 13 or fewer points 4 of their last 7 games, and that's kind of why they got some dubs. They just got to take that next step defensively.
Yeah, like you mentioned, no Besh or Jack Besh is gone. Savion Williams is gone, sort of as an all-around guy, and they bring in a couple transfers, and then also a couple young receivers that I've read that they like a lot. So if those guys make plays, I very much
– You see who they open with?
Oh, yeah.
North Carolina.
So is Chapel Bill going to put Hoover in a vacuum?
Chapel Bill will be bad, dad joke there. That's definitely an interesting opener. By the way, you see who they have game three too.
Yeah, SMU.
SMU. I mean, that's not too great. Followed up by Arizona State, Colorado, and Kansas State and Baylor. So, I mean, the front part of that schedule. The front part of that schedule is really, really, really weird. Like you're going to get weird quickly, and so it's nice to know you're on them, Brent. That's your squad to get right. Mine's Baylor, so we get to watch this in the Big 12. It'll be fun.
Yeah, we get to watch it prime time by themselves that first weekend with the game against North Carolina. So that'll be fun to see. Next up, the team that is kind of looking for a quarterback because theirs has now had some issues and is no longer at BYU. And Jake Retzlaff announced he was going to Tulane, which, by the way, makes that team very interesting from a group of five standpoint and whether or not they can make a playoff type run. But the Cougars, that's just, I think, him having to go season altering, I think, in a way, potentially.
Okay. So why?
Well, the two guys that are there have zero career attempts as a BYU quarterback.
Okay. And so here's what I'll ask you, Mr. Numbers guy. Like, Retzlaff was a good guy, was a good quarterback. Good scrambling, good throwing. Was he elite really in any of those markers or did he do anything on a level that graded out like super elite? Because
no.
I didn't see that. And here's another thing too. He threw an interception a game. Like, he threw an interception every game. Like, almost every you could mark him down for a mistake. And here's the one thing that's kind of lost. First of all, Kalani Sitake's a stud. And the way he talks, the way he leads is really cool, man. Like, he's aggressive. Fourth down means an extra down. It doesn't mean punt. I mean, fakes, you'll see it. But one thing about this team, they won close games, and they won games, Brent, with special teams. They had kick returns in big games. They had two kick returns in two different games that they won. They had two punt returns in two different games that they won. So you're talking about 11-2, and you're talking about teams that regress to the mean. Like, this BYU now losing experience at quarterback, losing a ton on the defensive line from a year ago. I think this is going to be an interesting team to watch because the one thing that they do, they're always physical. They always find guys. I saw you smile, by the way, when I said do-do. Like, yeah. Seriously, guys are just guys all the time. Like,
I can't help it. Sorry.
But Jay Hill did a great job with this defense, and the turnaround was really good. And they just – they do an unbelievable job of developing guys. And talk about the schedule because
– that's the silver lining. If Retzlaff's there – I put it in pen 6-0 because it's Portland State, Stanford, at East Carolina, at Colorado, West Virginia at home, at Arizona. Like, now a lot of those are coin flips, but
I'd be careful. I'd have been careful with East Carolina anyways because they're going to be really good. But yeah, the schedule, man, that schedule is pretty solid. They also avoid Kansas State, Baylor, and Arizona State.
Yeah.
Like, that's pretty dang good, man. Like, is that four of the top? I mean, that's three of the top four other teams that maybe you're putting in the top, and maybe you add, you know, and they're going to play Utah, and, you know, that's going to be tough. And your team, TCU, they got both of them at home. They got to go at Iowa State and Texas Tech. So I see the reason for optimism, but I also, realistically, I just they're good. Chase Roberts is back. LJ Martin, like, Roberts was their leading receiver. Martin was fun to watch. He's a big, strong guy. Like, he's got some speed to him as well. But, you know, they won, you know, 22-21 against Utah last year. They won 17-13 against they lost to Kansas 17-13. But they won so many of those close games, 34-28. They barely beat Oklahoma State last year by three. Like, I think we're going to see a little bit of fallback with BYU.
Yep, I agree. Next up, I guess it's an Houston, another Cougar. But with Willie Fritz, year one, not so great. But by the way, historically with him,
he wins.
There's a year two leap. There's usually a big leap in year two. And you've got Pollock's passion of last offseason, Connor Wegman at quarterback. So, unfortunately, though, swing and a miss. Unfortunately, now, though, their defensive coordinator, who is sort of a good name, was now at Texas Tech. And they're like, if you look at their roster, it's massively portal heavy.
Dude.
So, like, beyond portal heavy.
I mean, here's the thing. There's a couple of teams that are coming up that we're going to talk about that you're like, okay, they're turning over 60 guys. They're turning over their staffs. And so when we're doing a preseason and you're trying to predict what somebody's going to be, it's really, really hard. And I think it's harder than ever anywhere. But I do know Willie Fritz has coached at a bunch of different divisions and a bunch of different levels, and he's won at all of them. And he's been super successful. And Houston finds talent, dude. Like, historically, Houston finds speed. Texas football, obviously, is really, really good. Yep. Can he recruit in that area? They were one of the worst offenses in the country a year ago. They were, Brent, I don't like to talk down about people, but like, and rip people to shreds, but that offense deserves it. Like, they were awful. They were really, really bad. And they've got to go. They've got to get better. Their offensive line is going to be all transfers, all new guys, you know, coming in with a new QB. How fast can they get on the same page? They lost their all Big 12 cornerback and safety, who are both gone. I think they both went in the portal, right? Like, both.
Yep. One's at Florida State, one's at LSU.
Yeah, I mean, that's not fun. So the good players that they did develop and have on their roster now, you know, went somewhere else. So I don't have a lot to expect from them. They've got to get better offensively than 14 points per game from a year ago. Their defense actually wasn't that bad. But I don't have a lot of expectations for the Cougs.
No, I don't either. But you mentioned the recruiting part. They do have the five-star kid, the Henderson kid, the quarterback, that is committed to them. So that's – which would maybe be the highest-ranked recruit ever in their school. I don't know. I haven't looked.
And isn't that beautiful, by the way, that you can do that now? Like, these schools that are – that are Houston's, that they can go put their eggs, they can go put all of their eggs in a quarterback basket and go get a guy. And I think that's, you know, that's fun to watch, and we'll see what it turns into. But, you know, 14 points a game a year ago is not going to get it done.
No. All right. Next up, he's a man, and he's how old now, Mr. Gundy?
56.
Something in that realm. I thought he was right around 60, maybe, because I want to say it was like the 20-year reunion or something of him saying that. Am I off base there with that?
Are 57. You bringing that up there? Okay. He's 57.
You're closer. So we're not quite at the 20-year reunion of that. But anyway, he made some interesting comments at the media days and
talked. He always has interesting comments.
But basically, that they're kind of playing the game now and playing the portal game and. They've kind of learned from their mistakes and learned how to go about things. And he was very open about that. And you look at, you know, so their roster, it's littered with transfer guys. And, you know, 13, if you look at their depth chart, any various depth charts you find, 13 of the 22 projected starters are from the portal. So he's got a completely new roster, and you know him, he's competitive, and he's not going to want to go away and not be good. Anymore.
Well, and you know, this is where he played, so he's got history here. He loves this school. An O-burger, the big fat O. He did not win a game in the Big 12 a year ago. That's never happened in his career. He's never had that kind of season. Like, that's just this is a prideful dude. And if you go through the list, Brent, and you watch his hires over the years, they go on to be OCs everywhere. Like, all of his guys that he goes and finds at different levels are really fun to watch. And so he didn't just rehaul or overhaul his players. He overhauled his staff too. Like,
yep.
I mean, so many new staff guys. Doug Meacham comes from TCU, who's been there for a while. And Todd Grantham comes as their DC. He comes from the New Orleans Saints. So, like, it's – There's a lot of new. There's a lot of change. You talked about NIL. They're throwing concerts and trying to raise money, and like they're doing everything they can to get in the game. But you know, the passing ability and the new offense, and neither one has a career attempt. But because Meacham came from TCU, he brings Zane Flores with him, who's a four-star quarterback, and so. Does that become your guy if he is? It's a passing type offense as opposed to Henje, is what I'm going to go with, by the way. Henjanai, I don't know how to say it. Hasenjanai. He's a dual threat guy, but it'll be interesting to see Oklahoma State. I love Gundy. I love his quotes, his sound bites. He's no nonsense. I just, that was a bad taste in all the Sooners' mouth. This is a proud program, man. I don't think they're going to come back and get a shutout again. Like they're going to get some dubs in the Big 12, so they'll take a step forward than 3-9.
And you know, we talked in the beginning about Arizona State being the sort of team worst to first team. I don't foresee that in any way this year. The bottom of this of the conference this year, I expect them to basically be the bottom of the conference this year, and it's just a matter of. Who do they pick off one of the big dogs that you think are going to be the top four to five teams? This is Oklahoma State's going to be one of those teams. Because they get Baylor at home, they get Kansas State at home, they get Iowa State at home. Do they get one of those games and ruin somebody else's season?
I'm not ready to look at their schedule and start predicting W's.
We can predict a loss at Oregon. You think we're – I mean, in week two,
it's tough, but this is a proud program. I think Bedlam's back though. Isn't it Bedlam returns this year? Is that this year? That's coming up. It's coming up though, right? Year. We're gonna get OU back on the schedule. I think at some point in the near future.
I don't know. That's
I hope so.
I haven't looked that far ahead.
Okay, I know.
Focus on the now here.
I know. Get on the now. Well, let's get on the now. The next team. Are you putting this next team? This is our last team for the day, right?
Yes, last one of the day.
You putting this team in the conversation? Is this one of your teams in the top tier to win the conference?
Negative.
Okay.
UCF, why? The Knights. I mean, as much as I like Scott Frost going back there, and by the way, as much as I like them as a program, I long thought this was just a sleeping giant type potential program because of being in Florida and all the struggles that all the other Florida teams had. If you could kind of be on the come up and get in the Power Four conference like they did, but. No, Gus Bus is now in Tallahassee, different area, maybe different area code, different zip code. I don't know. But yeah, Scott Frost is back. That's probably the most interesting thing I've got to say about them at this point.
Yeah. Complete more passes and stop the run. I mean, from a year ago, they were a struggle bus to watch, you know, passing game and just stopping the run. Like the games they were in that were competitive were shootouts, you know, and they just gave up so many easy touchdowns. And this is how fun can this offense be? Scott Frost, you know, he struggled his butt off at Nebraska and he wasn't ready for that, but he did a good job his first stint and, you know, he returns and, you know, what does he do? Can he get some guys there? And it's a new era. It's a different day. And his return, it was so good when he left. And the thought of it returning to that, it's going to be difficult. It's going to be a different world. It's not the same. UCF isn't in the same spot. The schools in the state, like you talked about, they aren't in the same spot. UCF should always find speed, though. They should always find offense. They should always find playmakers because I can throw a rock and literally at any school in Florida and hit a kid that can run 4.4. Like you should find those guys. And so it's going to be interesting to watch. They surely take a step up. But I'm surprised you don't have them in your top four. That's disrespectful. Jeez.
No. Well, I mean, hey, they do have Taven Jackson at QB, who we do know of and we have seen a little bit of from his time in Indiana. By the way, the rest of their – if you look at their – starting 22, you're talking double, almost 15 to 16 transfer portal guys. So it's much like these other teams. It's entirely new team, new coach, flip the roster. That's kind of, we're going to talk about that probably tomorrow night with some of the other teams in the Big 12. My team, West Virginia, like flip the entire roster. So what do you get? You don't know. You just got to wait and see.
This is our last team we're covering today, and then we'll give you more in the rest of the Big 12 preview. But like of Houston, Oklahoma State, and UCF, who's going to win the most games?
I'm kind of basically picking between the Gundy comeback or the Fritz leap year in the second year leap. So I'll probably go with Willie Fritz in the second year leap from that squad.
Yeah. I mean, when we started doing the previews, there was a lot of like, ooh, okay, similar.
And Connor Wegman at QB, I think from a talent perspective, if he gets right, gets confidence, things like that, you might actually have something there.
Yeah.
That would be
all my right, dudes. Well, that's half of the Big 12. We'll get to the other half to you, soon, ASAP, and getting closer and closer to college football, man. So continue to stay tuned. Do all those things you do, like with the like and subscribe and rate, whatever that stuff is you do. We're excited. We continue to grow. We appreciate you guys for supporting. See you guys soon.